Part 4. A Length of Blood-Stained Chain. Chapter 17. Eaters of the Dead. Centuries ago, at the dawn of the Great Crusade. Amit. Nasir Amit was one of the first. He was a scion of a toxic bloodline, with only the scarcest claim to humanity running through the code of science inside his blood. They'd found him in the charnel prisons beneath the surface of Boeotia, living off the flesh of those too sick to go on. He was a candidate as vile as he was unlikely, a humanish mutant that would have been executed by any of the other legions. The other legions, though, had the luxury of choice. The Revenants did not. He was exactly what they were looking for. They'd taken him, those grey-armoured apothecaries, pulling him from his tribe, stealing him from the metaphorical gutters of techno-barbarity. They held the mutated child down and cut him open and sewed him back up. They worked on him with needles and saws, then worked inside him with blades and probes. They saturated his veins with transfusions of blood that they insisted wasn't holy, despite how it drove him mad and sane and mad once again, showing him the future and the past colliding when he closed his eyes. His own blood, transubstantiated by the infusions, burned inside his body and made every heartbeat hurt. When they implanted a second heart within his swelling chest, that doubled the pain. The apothecaries were as gentle as they needed to be, which is to say, they were next to merciless. They were doing their duty, and their duty was to drag his mutated form kicking and screaming all the way into ascension. He was one of the first to survive the process. He emerged on the other side of their medical sorcery, a different being, keeping nothing of his former life, not even his name. He took a name from high Gothic legend, Nasir Amit, a character name from an ancient play set in old Himalaya. He had no particular emotional attachment to the narrative. It was merely one of the texts he studied while learning to read. You could have told him that the name meant something, or that it held some symbolic significance in the piece of literature, but he wouldn't have cared. He would only have wondered why you did. After his ascension, he took no pride in his beauty. The physical perfection he saw reflected in the eyes of his arming thralls, or in the steel of his magnificent blade, wasn't something to cherish as if he'd achieved it himself. It was merely a result of his genetic apotheosis, a trait shared by all his brothers. It could be noted, even appreciated, but only with appropriate humility. He believed there was an underlying truth to his new existence, one that he sought to bear in mind at all times. He'd carried this truth through the years since his ascension, across the radiation-soaked wastelands of Terra, through the cramped slaughter tunnels and cave labyrinths of Neptune's frozen moons, and then out into the great galaxy beyond. It was no great revelation of philosophy, just a truth as blunt as it was real. What did it matter if a prince looked back at you in the mirror when you were a weapon of surpassing ugliness? No shining medals for the Revenant Legion, no glory chants for the Eaters of the Dead. Their finery was war-torn ceramite, the grey of a winter storm, and their medals were the bloodstains they didn't bother to wash off. Their recruits were genetic degenerates, taken to stave off extinction, and the songs sung in their honour were the disgusted whispers with which the other legions spoke of them. To Amit, beauty was an irrelevance. Duty was all, just as it had been for the apothecaries who'd flooded his malformed body with the blood of his then-unknown Primarch. He'd met a Primarch once. The experience hadn't moved him the way he'd hoped and expected. The encounter had come at the end of the Kai Buran compliance, a protracted conflict where the Revenant Legion had fought unsupported and outnumbered against the mutated population of an entire world. Warriors from other legions, those that tended to preen about honour or consider it a notion that could be tarnished, might have abandoned the compliance entirely, or been forced through privation into suspended animation. Though it would take months, even Space Marines could starve. The Revenant Legion endured, as they always did, and in the filth that cakes men's souls between battles, the warriors of the Immortal Ninth thrived. Rogal Dorn, arriving at last with reinforcements, had censured the Immortal Ninth at the war's end. The Praetorian of Terror, new to his inheritance of the Imperial Fists, had gathered the surviving revenants into rows of squads aboard his precious phalanx, and there he'd coldly expounded on the virtuous nature of the Imperium, as if he'd been present from the start, as if he'd been the one to cleanse Terror in the Unification Wars, as if he'd been the one to sail from the Light of Sol, carrying the first banners of the Great Crusade. Amit, not yet a sergeant, had breathed in the stink of mutant blood from his armour plating, unable to believe what he was hearing. When Rogal Dorn had politely demanded the Revenants' answer for their actions, he hadn't been alone in wondering if this was some bizarre jest. Several of the Revenants actually laughed, the sound an expression of confusion and amusement in equal measure. Isildur Ossuran, Legion Master, had stepped forward. His boots clanked on the deck as he and his blood-medalled brothers faced the pristine ranks of the Imperial Fists and their golden demigod of a father. Helmetless, Ossuran was beautiful, as all the Revenants were beautiful. He was the image of a painter's artistry come to life, though a painting slashed and scorched through deep maltreatment. He answered Dorn's tirade with two words. "We won." This was not the right thing to say. Rogal Dorn listed their apparent misdeeds back to them. The devouring of enemy dead, not for the awakening of their omophagia organs, not for appropriate tactical use, but for sustenance, for meat. "Yes," Ossuran had replied. "This was their way, and they had won." They had, Dorn insisted, rendered their own legion serfs down for nourishment. And again, "Yes," Ossuran had replied. The Emperor had charged the Ninth Legion to win this war, not die of starvation unsupported. There were blood rites that the Primarch wasn't taking into consideration. There were rituals of cannibalistic holiness that permeated not just the Revenant Legion, but countless human cultures across time. Did the results not matter to Lord Rogal Dorn? Was he only interested in the methods by which war was waged? Dorn wouldn't be moved by the rhetoric. There were reports, he knew, of the Grey Warriors eating the foe and their families for the purposes of crushing enemy morality. "And yes," Ossuran had said again, as if speaking to a dull child instead of a demigod, "those reports were true. They were as true on Kai Buran as they were in other compliances on other worlds." "And we won," he said to the Primarch once more. Rogal Dorn dismissed them in weary disgust, allowing them to return to their vessel, the Gloriana-class Grey Daughter. There was little pleasure in this homecoming. The Grey Daughter, in the decades before she would become the Red Tear, was a grim and hollow fortress, often as empty as the void in which she sailed. Their achievement, the compliance of Kai Buran, wasn't recorded in the annals of the Great Crusade as an imperial victory, despite the many revenants that had bled and died for it. On the Grey Daughter's command deck, Amit had watched the oculus with narrowed eyes as the phalanx obliterated the capital city, Buran, from orbit, erasing the Revenant Legion's victory along with their supposed sins. In time, there would be other censures, perhaps not as many as those that would blight the 8th Legion, or the 12th, but enough to breed a sense of unease around the 9th. Amit felt no hatred for the actions of the Imperial Fists. He felt no anger towards their lord and father, Rogal Dorn. Uneasiness spread through his guts instead, as he stood on the ship's bridge, and bore witness to the erasure of his brother's bloody work. He couldn't help but wonder, was this what all the Primarchs would be like when they were rediscovered? This inflexible? This biased in favour of their own methodologies and judgments of what should and shouldn't be? Was this how his own Primarch would treat the warriors fashioned in his image? Tradition called them to the Grey Daughter's mausoleum. What they did there had no official name, though the warriors of the Legion referred to it offhand as the Charnel Feast. When the Revenants were the Revenants no longer, fighting for the Imperium under a much nobler cognomen, this ritual would come to be called the Rite of Remembrance. That future incarnation of the Ninth Legion would make an art of layering nobility over their gory roots. But ceremony was sparse in these earliest nights. The men present were still decades away from becoming the Angels of Blood, as they gathered by torchlight in the cold squalor of the Grey Daughter's bowels. There, they devoured their own dead. To swallow a brother's flesh was to swallow his memories, to take the essence of the fallen into oneself, tasting insight into life witnessed through other eyes. The Charnel Feast preserved the scraps of history the Revenant Legion possessed, without the need to set it onto parchment for the judging eyes of others. No less importantly, it preserved the shades of the worthiest dead. Amit barely ground the mouthfuls of raw meat between his teeth, preferring to swallow it in icy chunks. He was indifferent to the flavour. Salt meat was salt meat, but each chunk rolling down his gullet sent a quicksilver sensation through his veins. He felt them in his craw, felt them slow dissolving in his stomach acids by the way his bloodstream tingled with memories and emotions that weren't his own. He remembered areas of familiar battlefields where he'd never fought, recalled the weight and use of weapons he'd never wielded, and felt the butcher's pleasure of cutting down foes he'd never himself faced. Each death he ate made him less human, more legionary, and he was more than content with each bite to take another transhuman step away from his low-blooded genesis. He wasn't alone. Almost 200 revenants gathered in the temple, not even enough to fill it to a 50th of its capacity. They crouched or sat by memorial statues and engraved honour rolls, veteran killers and newly turned warriors alike, eating from blood-stained silver bowls. The Legion thralls responsible for bringing the food to each warrior offered up their bounties with trembling hands. The servants' racing heartbeats made a thrumming percussion audible only to the warriors whom they served. Humans at a charnel feast were always at risk of falling to the fangs of an overeager revenant. Killing one's own serfs was regarded as regrettable rather than punishable. Amit sat on the cool metal deck, drifting in the mild hallucinatory daze of several other men's memories. Every minute or so, as the images in his mind's eye began to ease, he used his fingers to scoop another gobbet of brain matter into his mouth with careful solemnity. At his side was his squad sergeant, Ataxerxes, sat with his back to a bronze plaque listing the dead. Ataxerxes observed the half-formalized ritual with the same unspeaking sincerity as Amit, but they were waiting, all of them, for Legion Master Isidur Ossaran. A monotasked servitor clade bore Ossaran on a funeral bier, draped with a black cloak. Other legions might have offered funerary chants or a reading of the slain officer's many achievements, but the Revenants eschewed such pageantry, even if they silently craved the legitimacy of it. It wasn't necessary, though. Ossaran was dead, but not gone. It wasn't the first time he'd died. Only one warrior would walk in the Legion Master's funeral parade. Captain Zaurin was the last centurion standing after Kai Buran, and it was to him that the honour fell. Amit watched as Zaurin's pale eyes tracked the passing of the funeral bier, and Zaurin's surviving lieutenant handed his captain the ceremonial flensing knife. As ritual tools went, it was a crude thing, as much a bone saw as a carving blade, and devoid of any ostentation. Zaurin closed his fingers around the hilt and handle. The other Astartes looked on in silence. Some nodded in respect or acknowledgement. Most just stared. The body of Isildur Ossuran was carried through to the Master's antechamber, where the lords of the Ninth Legion were interred. Zaurin went with it, pacing slowly behind the servitors, clutching the flensing knife in a loose-knuckled grip. Both he and the corpse were ceremonially nude, another primal touch to the already primitive ritual. Last in the train, more servitors carried Ossuran's armour, repaired from the battle that had felled him. At the hallway's far end, the great silver doors slammed shut. Zaurin, the corpse, the servitors, and the few warrior priests that the Ninth Legion could maintain were sealed within. There they would stay, until the private portion of the rite was over. In the end, it was a thing swiftly done. Scarcely half an hour passed before Ossuran threw the antechamber doors open himself, striding back into the presence of his brothers, armoured now in the relative finery of war-torn Legion Grey. The Legion Master scanned the packs of reverent cannibals, summoning several of them to him by name. Amit was one of them. He rose as commanded, handed his bowl to the nearest thrall, and crossed the chamber. Up close, he could see the differences in Ossuran. Though most of the Legion resembled one another, and presumably their undiscovered Primarch, they weren't limited to the crudity of human eyesight. The Astartes could tell each other apart by even the tiniest distinctions of posture, expression, bone structure, and scarring. Untrained humans might consider them practically clones of one another, but to Amit's eyes, each of his brothers was entirely unique. Zaurin carried himself differently now. He stood as Ossuran had stood, with the same guarded aggression, rather than with Zaurin's easy confidence. He gave the same side glances that Ossuran had given before speaking, in moments of thought. It was strange, even for one accustomed to the ways of the Legion, to see such changes take hold. Amit wondered what habits of fallen brethren he'd adopted himself over the years, and whether Zaurin could still taste Ossuran's memory-saturated flesh on his lips.
"Melkaya," Zaurin said. "Fifth Company needs a new captain. The rank is yours."
The named warrior accepted with a salute.
"As you wish, Legion Master."
"Amit,"
Zaurin greeted him next.
"Yes, Master Ossuran."
"Fifth Company requires a sergeant to replace Melkaya. The rank is yours."
Even Zaurin's tone and inflection was Ossuran's now, while his breath was scented of the Legion Master's blood and salt flesh. Amit nodded.
"I won't let you down, sir."
Ossuran regarded him with Zaurin's face, with Zaurin's eyes, with Zaurin's scars, but the soul and mind behind the eyes were fused to the Legion Master's through the feast of flesh.
"I know, brother."
A few more promotions were handed out with the same ease of necessity as the elevations of Melkaya and Amit. None were deemed worthy enough of reclaiming and replacing the dead by name and deed. Only Ossuran, as Legion Master, held that honour today.
"Back to your men,"
Ossuran dismissed them. And back they went without a word, returning to the red rituals that passed for formality in the immortal Ninth. Like many of his kind, Amit measured time in the succession and conclusion of wars. By that way of judging things, he was still young when the Revenant Legion reached the planet Nithander. They descended through the clouds, these blood-stained angels, offering mercy with one hand and promising extinction with the other. They brought the Emperor's message, along with the Emperor's desire for, with such careful phrasing, a state of compliance. They had come from Terra, from the true Earth, and it was their intent to unite the lost colonies of humanity, even the ones that had grown prosperous and independent, especially those, in fact. They didn't face mutants here. The people of Nithander were humans, pure strain, untwisted by Old Night.
"Join us," the Armada in orbit broadcasted to the surface. "We are your brothers and sisters." "Do not oppose us," said the armored angels, meeting Nithander's kings and queens, "lest we become your destroyers."
But the people of Nithander refused the Imperium's attempts at peaceable unity, and so the tone of the compliance had turned. Master Ossuran ordered the ambassadors to return to orbit. Behind that command, his warriors made ready for planetfall. The Revenant Legion attacked as dawn rose over the capital city. The war that followed was brief, as wars fought by humans against the Legiones Astartes tended to be. It was over almost before it began, an expression often stained by hyperbole, but one that was, in this case, desperately accurate. As the sun set on the first and final day of the Nithander compliance, Amit walked among the dead and the dying. The enemy were human, possessing weapons of concentrated light, not dissimilar in effect to Imperial LAS technology. In design, however, Nithandan technology varied drastically from the emerging Imperial norm. Rather than using power packs and focusing lenses, Nithandan ingenuity had harnessed polished crystals and gaseous transmission chambers. Doing his due diligence, Amit had studied the cultural reports before the compliance began and broken open several of their weapons to analyze himself. The developmental path of their technology was notable, but far from fascinating. Chief among Nithandan cultural divergences was the tradition of using artificially grown stone in place of natural rock when it came to construction. With a warrior's eye, Amit's first thought upon seeing cities constructed of the stuff had been to speculate how it would fare against Imperial artillery. Not well, as it happened. Not well at all. The battle was a battle like so many others. The capital city had burned, the Nithandan resistance had been brave but utterly futile, and millions of lives had been lost purely because a population chose ignorance over enlightenment. Amit wasn't without imagination, and he occasionally walked the edges of battlefield philosophy. These people had died to defend their way of life, which so many stories insisted was an admirable sacrifice of one's existence. But was it? What about their culture was so worthy of preservation? Perhaps if the Nithandans had shut up about how it was better to die free than live as a slave, then they would have realized their fate wasn't slavery at all. The Imperium had come to awaken them, to lift them from their selfish darkness. Now the survivors of a much diminished world would become Imperial citizens anyway, rendering all that sacrifice less than worthless. These were his thoughts as he walked amongst the slain and those soon to join them. An Imperial army squad was making the rounds nearby, stretchering away the wounded of both sides. They regarded Amit the way all humans regarded him, with their pupils dilated at his blood-stained beauty and their hearts racing with the threat of his armoured physicality. Their medic was crouched by a wounded Nithandan soldier, tending to the woman's wounds. Amit saw the injuries, bolt shrapnel, third-degree burns, significant tissue trauma, where the medic had peeled back the Nithandan's contoured armour plating. He approached the pack of humans, noting with disinterest the fearful hatred in the Nithandan fighter's eyes. What a waste this all was, he thought. Lord, the army officer saluted him, not with the fist of unity, Amit noted, but with the increasingly common sign of the Aquila. Amit showed his incisors, unsmiling.
Leave us.
The army squad gathered their fur cloaks about them and began moving away, all but the medic.
Lord, our orders. We have to aid the enemy wounded.
Amit tilted his head. This was new. The Expeditionary Fleet's human elements had never questioned the Revenant Legion's practices before. The Revenants understood the army forces accompanying them, found their rituals revolting. But there had never been any pushback, let alone rebellion. Formal complaints to expeditionary command fell on deaf ears. Was it even cannibalism, really? Amit was hardly alone in believing the Astartes were another species to the original genetic knotwork of humanity. Amit gestured, bare-handed, to the wounded Nathandan soldier. There were others he could choose, countless others among the injured and the dead, but the reaction of his human allies intrigued him.
This one is mine. She belongs to the Ninth Legion.
The rest of the squad were urging their medic away with hissed voices and desperate beckoning. Amit found the man's refusal fascinating.
I have my orders, Sergeant Amit. This soldier's wounded.
Amit looked briefly around at the rubble. He crouched, picked up a rock the size of a human fist, and with no ceremony whatsoever, he drew back his arm with a snarl of servos and slung the rock into the Nathandan trooper's face. The impact annihilated her from the neck up. Amit said, in a tone of bland reasonableness,
"And now this soldier is dead. You can leave with a clean conscience. Your duty discharged to the letter."
The medic, who jerked back from the hurled stone, turned wide eyes from the twitching corpse to its towering killer. Amit could hear the man's heart racing, and in a moment of mundane biological harmony, the dead body's heart giving its last beats.
I will be reporting this to my superiors, Sergeant Amit.
Do whatever you feel compelled to do.
Amit drew his flensing knife and advanced on the body. Either good sense finally dawned, or the Imperial's courage finally gave out, as the squad moved away in a hurry. Amit paid them no more mind. He crouched by the corpse, sifting through the wet wreckage of the skull with the tip of his blade. Despite the destruction he'd inflicted, several choice morsels remained viable. He spitted them on his knife, wiping the grey chunks one by one into his palm. There were shards of rock and bone in each nugget of brain meat, but his teeth made short crunching work of that. He tasted the dead soldier's life. He swallowed and saw her dreams. It all came in a throbbing flood, out of order but not out of context, because with the visions came emotion. The child's face he saw in her memories was, for now, not a strange youth on a rebellious world, but Lelwyn, a beloved son who had begged her not to go to war. Amit felt the dead woman's tears, though his face was dry. He felt the warmth of her child's last embrace through the layers of his armour. He watched through her eyes as the sky rained drop-pod fire. He felt the fear, and a sweetly curious sensation it was too, as she first saw one of the attackers, one of the grey-clad revenants, butchering through her platoon with blurred motion and ruthless efficiency. He ate more of her. Beneath the turmoil of surface emotions was, if the wordplay can be excused, the meat of the matter. Amit had never operated a crane down at the Taurus dock in the far east of the city. He'd never even seen such a machine, but now he knew their exact form and function, and could operate one by muscle memory. He knew the lessons learned in the halls of an Nathandan academy over a decade ago, lessons of an isolationist culture that feared reaching out into the stars, lest they bring damnation upon themselves. He remembered lectures in sciences he had never studied. He recalled training with weapons he had never used. All of this melted into the mess of the other moments he'd harvested so far, taken from other lives. An ever-growing stew of stolen memories. There was little tactical insight to be gleaned at this point. No, before the battle. That was when you harvested to learn of enemy logistics and tactical vulnerabilities. After the battle was for remembrance, for reflection. And in these quiet moments of honesty, for the pleasure of it. Of immersion within a life that wasn't your own. Of knowing your enemy and remembering them in a way more visceral and useful than the dubious immortality of artifacts in a shipboard museum. He wasn't quite done with this crimson ritual when the Vox opened up in a storm of breathless reports. They came not from the last embattled elements on the ground, but from the relative serenity of orbit. Amit was on his feet at once, casting about for the others in his squad, seeking the closest gunship. The voices across the vox, they made no sense. They overlapped and overran. He could see other revenants nearby standing rigid amidst the dead as they sought to process just what they were hearing. The Imperial troopers, working in their own clusters, wore expressions of naked shock as officers and comms operators relayed word from orbit to the rest of their squads. Among the soldiers' words to each other, he heard someone ask,
"What if he's like them?"
Amit ignored the humans.
"What's going on?"
he said into the vox.
"Repeat and clarify, please. Repeat and clarify."
There was repetition, but little clarity, until the voice of Isildur Ossaran crackled across the vox web, riding a priority signal. The Legion Master's tone was stern with his usual control, but Amit could hear the rawness of emotion beneath it.
"Brothers of the Immortal Ninth, the Emperor has found him. The Emperor has found our Primarch.